Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 26th of May, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish, with me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, we're delighted. We've got Patrick Henningsen from 21st Century Wire back with us today. We've also got David Scott with Northern Exposure. And of course, David reporting events north of the border, but we've got much that concerns politics for the country as a whole. And what is happening? Many people are saying to us, what do we think is happening at the moment? And the simple answer is this. Let's get it on screen. We are watching a conservative coup. In our opinion, there is no doubt that the intention of Theresa May is to win a substantial majority. This is where she's trying to get. And we can see the country closing down into a police state as we speak. Of course, this is causing some people problems. We'll bring in Katie Hopkins from the Daily Mail, but also LBC. She's been a naughty girl because as events in the country become more unpredictable, so have her tweets and some pretty unpleasant stuff coming out from her. This is from the Evening Standard, a little video clip. Explosion in France, shooting at a German hospital, knife attack in London, and Ramadan has not yet begun. Without food, these sods get nasty. This is pretty nasty stuff coming out of a mainstream journalist. I think this lady is in a state of cognitive dissonance.
Well, I have to say, it's a bit extreme to call her a journalist, though.
Okay, but nevertheless, she's getting those articles in what are supposed to be mainstream press. Yep. Sadiq's prayers are with a knifeman at this difficult time. He's cut his hand, ambulance staff are administering a halal plaster. And this one, I think you'll be interested in, Mike, because we've got basically, having trouble with the distance here, Malachi...
Swaik,
thank you. Elected VP of Exeter Students Guild. Saudi has big plans for your city. Stop the takeover. Okay. I thought that was very interesting because I'm a bit critical, but I'm also going to say I think this lady is being disturbed by starting to understand something of what's going on. But this is the one that's done a... She'd put out 22 dead, number rising. Schofield, don't you even dare. Do not be part of the problem. We need a final solution. Hashtag should be Manchester there. So this is pretty, pretty dark stuff. And I'll just bring in this because she came out with this comment. What planet are we on when in the face of all these red flags, our leaders allow such deeply suspicious characters back into Britain and then expect us to swallow their lies that we will not give in to terror? And I had to put at the bottom there, Katie, please wake up. Once you know they lie, they can lie about anything, including Westminster child abuse and the war on terror itself. I think this lady's having some sort of, it's cognitive dissonance. She's beginning to see the reality. She knows the politicians are lying, but she can't quite work out. They've been lying about everything.
Yeah. OK, well, we're going to talk a bit about what was going on yesterday in Brussels at NATO. Because we didn't get time to do that yesterday. And the first thing we'll discuss is the fact that Montenegro has joined NATO. So there's Jens Stoltenberg shaking the man's hand. Welcome to the club. Just so that everybody knows where Montenegro is, there it is, opposite Italy, south of Bosnia and Herzegovina, west of Serbia. So this is the kind of area that we're talking about. And so, of course, NATO bombed Montenegro 18 years ago. Doesn't matter. They've welcomed them in and Montenegro has gone in, but not all very smoothly because just in December, just to give an idea of what the sort of popular opinion is, in December a poll said that 39.5% of the population was for joining NATO, 39.7%, slightly more, against joining NATO. The Democratic Party of Socialists, which is the ruling party in Montenegro, only just gathered enough votes to ratify the NATO accession treaty. And they live under what some people are describing as the spectre of Russia. But in fact, Russia, Patrick, if I can bring you in at this point, Russia is an historical ally many, many people in Montenegro in favour of closer ties to Russia rather than closer ties to NATO. This is why we're seeing this more or less 50-50 split. What are your thoughts on the fact that Montenegro is finally part of NATO?
Well, this has been a long time in the making, but there's two important points of this. One, put aside Russia for a second. And what's more important in this for the U.S., for Western European NATO countries, is the fact is to isolate Serbia, basically. So what you have is this encirclement of Serbia. Serbia is an ally of Russia, and that's always going to be that way. There's no way they can turn or flip Serbia on that. This traditionally, and also links to the Orthodox Church politically, those ties go a long way back. So by making Montenegro a NATO country, they've effectively encircled Serbia, which is Russia's most ardent ally in the Balkans. So if a Balkans confrontation is to be triggered, which by all evidence, it looks like that's definitely one possibility for NATO, then Serbia will be isolated in that sense and then can be demonized. So in terms of Russia, Montenegro offers Russia a strategic port in the Adriatic Sea. And the Admiral Kurtsinov, which is their big aircraft carrier, asked for permission to do refueling back in October, just last year, and it was denied. And so in terms of Syria and Russia's port in Tartus, having a strategic port on the Adriatic side just offers them a few more options. That's now been effectively shut down by this move. So there's no way that's going to happen. So for Russia, this basically cuts off the Adriatic Sea as any sort of a viable strategic logistical option for the Russian Navy. So that's huge. So in Serbia and Russia, for those two issues, this is a major thing. They also had a fake. It looked like, I don't know if it seemed like a fake assassination plot, which was put up in the media last November. A lot of people remember that in the news. This was supposedly a Russian and Serbian plot to assassinate the prime minister of Montenegro. The timing of that with wanting to shoehorn Montenegro into NATO. I don't know if there was any actual evidence to substantiate this international cloak and dagger plot at the time, but certainly it provided a bit of PR support for maybe nudging Montenegro more towards NATO rather than Moscow.
Okay, thanks for that. So let's move on and see what else is going on. Well, here is Jens Stoltenberg arriving at the new NATO headquarters in Brussels. As you can see, the hashtag is We Are NATO. So we're all in it together. In fact, well, we'll come on to it in a second. But first of all, let's have a look at Theresa May, because she was there, of course, with her strong and stable necklace, Brian.
She's clearly locked onto the heavyweight jewellery at the moment. I think this is all part of image. She's desperately trying to cling on the coattails of Maggie Thatcher. She hasn't got the personality to do it. So you look at her, every word is controlled. She's not an independent person.
Okay, well, of course, Donald Trump is there as well. And here he is having a walk through the new NATO headquarters. This is a spectacular building. I have no idea how much it cost. As we said yesterday, it's now been handed over from Belgium to NATO, so sovereign territory, it seems. We did go through the, or at least discuss the agenda for yesterday, and mid-afternoon or so, they were commemorating 9/11, and specifically Article 5, which was invoked following 9/11. And Jens Stoltenberg here, when he was speaking, it was an incredible speech. One for all and all for one is what he said, Brian. Literally those words. So invoking, I wondered whether he was D'Artagnan, where he thought he was D'Artagnan,
yeah,
or something.
Three Musketeers.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. Well, he gave his talk. Now, the first thing that Donald Trump then did when he followed up was that he offered Theresa May condolences for what happened in Manchester. And this was the look that he got back. So let's just have a closer look at that.
Truly phenomenal, this.
Truly phenomenal. She, I don't know how to describe what it was, but she scowled at him as if he was the devil incarnate.
Well, it's a glare, isn't it? And you look into those eyes. We've seen a couple of other photographs of Theresa May, one where she's stomping along the road, almost looking down into the ground. But what comes out of those eyes? Is this a woman who's going to sort out child abuse? Well, of course, she's the woman that put Melanie Shaw in solitary confinement for 10 months. So this woman, I have said consistently, one of the most dangerous politicians that Britain has ever had. And of course, as Home Secretary, she has been the lead to build this vast British state spying apparatus. Now we're seeing the second phase, which is the police state.
Well, what I wanted to do was to pull two little sections out of Donald Trump's speech. So let's listen to the first one, and then we'll ask Patrick and David for comment.
This call for driving out terrorism is a message I took to a historic gathering of Arab and Muslim leaders across the region, hosted by Saudi Arabia. There I spent much time with King Salman, a wise man who wants to see things get much better rapidly. The leaders of the Middle East have agreed at this unprecedented meeting to stop funding the radical ideology that leads to this horrible terrorism.
Patrick, what did he just say?
He just said that all the Arab leaders of the Middle East that he met with recently, which are all basically the monarchs, the GCC countries, Saudi Arabia and Qatar and so forth, but mainly we're talking about Saudi Arabia, said they've agreed to stop funding the radical ideology that's driving this global terrorism. Okay, so let's talk about that. Saudi Arabia, its funding of mosques, radical clerics being dispatched to each and every country, all the satellite TV channels that they have, which they fund, which spreads the radical ideology, which provides the propaganda support for people like al-Nusra, like ISIS, Ahrar al-Sham, and all these groups that are masquerading as rebels in Syria at the moment. So Trump's basically admitted it, that they're funding this, effectively funding terrorism. He didn't go that far as to say terrorism. But yet he's meeting with them and giving them first state status, favored nation status above other countries. And meanwhile, also, you know, Britain and the U.S. turning a tidy profit, selling arms to these people. So they're the cause of terrorism. And this is after all the rhetoric that Iran is the number one state sponsor of terror in the world, this kind of hollow talking point that just keeps getting repeated ad nauseum in Washington over and over again, which means nothing. And here we have the president himself admitting Saudi and its ilk are basically behind this problem. So this should be seized upon by the media. It should be headline story. They should grab it like a pit bull, and never let go until something, some resolution comes out of this politically. But no, absolute silence. They gloss right over it. It's as if it didn't happen.
David, have you any thoughts on what Trump has just said and in fact on the Saudi visit in general?
Well, it's a remarkable admission, and it was it's very striking that it ties in with what we're seeing on the ground in Britain. I was speaking to one of my friends from the Glasgow Pakistani community, and what he's saying is they're very worried. They're seeing their children becoming ever more radical. They're seeing the integration that his generation expected to run forward going rapidly in reverse. Their children are becoming radical. Their children are becoming isolated from the society in which they live. And one of the drivers of this is the mosques. And he's explaining to me how that operates, because the mosques receive funding for building construction from, amongst other places, Saudi Arabia, from the very people that Donald Trump was talking about. And the terms and conditions apply. Like all gifts, terms and conditions apply. And one of the terms and conditions is, well, the preacher that you get in the mosque is a Saudi approved. He's not Scottish, he's not British, he's not got any link to this country or to the Pakistani community in it. But he comes in and preaches a very hardline Wahhabist brand of Islam, endorsed and funded by Saudi Arabia. So we are seeing this in Britain, on our streets, in our communities. And here's Donald Trump confirming it.
And if I can just add to that, David, because we've had, obviously you and I have had discussions about this, but the original information came into us separately. We have also had this type of report, and of course it's not only Saudi money, it's money from Qatar is mentioned especially, but you take the money, you build the mosque, then in comes a very different imam from the one that people are used to. And there are many very, very good researchers who have been looking into this angle and making very detailed, accurate reports, some of which have been sent through to Britain's police forces, and the result has been complete and utter silence. So there's something extremely strange going on, that we've got the President of the United States now spilling the beans that Saudi has been funding and driving this radical behaviour. Clearly, if he knows about it, British intelligence knows about it. But when people warn that something's coming, later, in a few minutes, we're going to be talking about Manchester. When people warn the intelligence authorities this is happening, they take no action. This is either gross incompetence, or we are seeing the intelligence services somehow involved with the creation of terror.
Brian, can I add something quickly to that?
Yes.
Yeah, if you look at the case of Abu Hamza in the Finsbury Park Mosque, and also Amjad Chowdhury and Abu Qatada, these high-profile so-called radical clerics that sort of dominate the tabloids over the last sort of 10, 15 years, okay? Multiple journalists, multiple articles, you can go search online. Journalists have found or made links between these preachers to the intelligence services, to the security services, and accusations have been made that Hamza and Chowdhury acting as informants, basically. So whatever their role is, clearly there is some communication with the state or with the security services. On what proviso, we don't know, because it's classified or probably shielded under official secrets or so forth. But so there is a connection there. It's already been established by a number of journalists, including some British journalists as well. But those also have been denied by the security service, by the police or MI5. I'm not sure which agency, but official denials have been made, even though clear links seem to be established. So I think this is an area of investigation. I think that's very under investigated. And I think through that investigation, we might learn and might find a lot more insight into really what's driving this so-called wave of radicalization in Britain and in Europe as well.
Okay, well, let's listen to some more of Donald and see what he had to say.
I have been very, very direct with Secretary Stoltenberg and members of the alliance in saying that NATO members must finally contribute their fair share and meet their financial obligations. But 23 of the 28 member nations are still not paying what they should be paying and what they are supposed to be paying for their defense. This is not fair to the people and taxpayers of the United States. And many of these nations owe massive amounts of money from past years and not paying in those past years. Over the last 8 years, the United States spent more on defense than all other NATO countries combined. If all NATO members had spent just 2% of their GDP on defense last year, we would have had another $119 billion for our collective defense and for the financing of additional NATO reserves.
So, Patrick, two things of note there. First of all, Macron and the Ukrainian, can't remember his name, sniggering to each other. Clearly, no respect there. But has Donald Trump been spending too much time amongst the New York mafia? Because that sounded like a protection racket he was proposing. You're not paying us enough. We pay in more than the rest of you put together. Pay up or else.
Yeah, you have to contribute 2% of your GDP into this protection racket. So what he's saying there is, you know, you need to put more into the military-industrial complex, because if you did, we would have had $119 billion more for our so-called collective defense. What he's really saying is there would have been $119 billion into the coffers of Lockheed Martin, of Raytheon, of Boeing, or some of these American companies that are slowly taking over some of the contract procurement opportunities in Britain and in other countries in Europe, plus the other European military industrial giants as well. So he's talking about our collective defense. Defense against who? Who's threatening to invade Europe? Who's threatening to invade? It's not Russia. Russia's not threatening to invade Eastern Europe. Okay, what we do see is NATO moving eastward to encircle Russia. That's complete. That's undeniable. So, you know, here's a president that said that NATO was defunct and was practically irrelevant during his campaign in order to get votes. And now he's in as president. And basically, yeah, he's chastising NATO a little bit, but he's not sort of, you know, undermining it by any stretch of the imagination. If anything, he's trying to consolidate NATO's power by laying this sort of financial commitment statement down. So, you know, amazing. So who's threatening Europe? Who's threatening to invade Europe? Is it the migrants? Is this why we need NATO? For the migrant crisis? Or for ISIS? You know, or for someone who drives their car onto the pavement in Westminster? Is this what NATO's for? It's not for the Russians, because they're not invading Europe. That's pretty clear.
Absolutely. Well, look, I wanted to just give an impression of the scale of this is just the entrance way to this building. It is spectacular. And they have on the right hand side the memorial to 9/11 there. And there's another memorial to the Berlin Wall on the left hand side. I haven't seen that one yet. I'm sure it's just as delightful as the 9/11 one. But of course, at all these events, it's a requirement to have a family photograph. So here it is, Theresa May in the front row, of course. Well, there you go. They look all very good. But this is probably the first of these types of events, G7, G8, NATO, EU-type heads of government meetings, where they have promoted the WAGs. So here we go. There you are. This is the WAGs photograph, the wives and girlfriends. Well, they don't seem to have too many. There's certainly less wives and girlfriends than there are delegates, but world leaders. But nonetheless, what is this about?
Well, to me, this is the start of the total blurring between political figures and pop stars. It's going to be very difficult to tell them apart shortly, because they behave the same, they dress the same. Don't know.
Yeah.
What was the big glass space for? Drugs, I would think.
Yeah, possibly. David, any thoughts on this?
One of the interesting things from the corporate world, from the business world, is you always can tell when a company is about to take a huge downturn because they get a big corporate HQ. These things come when the purpose of the company is no longer really focused on anything other than vanity. And they're losing the plot. They're starting to invest in things that don't actually contribute to the productive output. And it's usually followed by bankruptcy. So I think the sign of this enormous headquarters, the inside of which looks like the Death Star, is in fact a sign of NATO's growing irrelevance and not anything else. And I would finally point out that if that's a piece of the Twin Towers of this, that they have there as part of the 9/11 memorial, then we want to seize that and do some testing on it, because most of the metal for that building was quickly shipped off to China and recast into new things. We never got a chance to have any proper forensics done on the building.
Good point there.
Okay, well, let's switch across to Manchester and events at Manchester. We'll bring in this photograph, which we showed yesterday. This was part of a Daily Mail report. It was about Salman Abidi. It said, how did he slip the net? Manchester terrorist Salman Abidi's own mother and his classmates warned security services. So we stick by that point. And the Mail is reporting that quite rightly. So our security services told repeatedly and again took no action. But there he is, circled top right. Now, an astute viewer said there's something wrong with this photograph. Let me show you what they were looking at. If we bring in the sun, which we can do quite easily, that's the shadow line. You see that on the man's chin. And you can see that the light is coming down and the shadow of his chin and face is being thrown to the right. But if we look at Abidi there, it is coming in from a completely different direction. And I have to say, I look at this and there is something not right. How has this image been changed? Is it now a photoshopped image for fake news? Mm. I'll leave our viewers to think about that. We'd just like to know what they think, so do tell us. And this is where we've now got armed British Transport Police are now travelling on the railways. Armed police, particularly police with automatic weapons, do not make me feel secure. But now we've got British Transport Police with automatic weapons. I would like to know when the decision was made to arm these police, who made that decision, and why this hasn't been fully brought into the public domain. Well, perhaps we get a clue from this man, Ben Wallace, the security minister. And I pulled out some of his quotes. This is him talking in The Guardian about Manchester. I've spoken to the police. The police are confident that they're in a position to have a good coverage of what's happened and of rolling it up. I can't say any more about that. That would threaten ongoing operations. It's still very live. It's still very hot. That's why we have critical as our security state. Well done. The Manchester family seem to have solved most of the problem for you. He goes on, we're trying to roll up a network. This is not a lone individual. We have to close down every lead we find. We have to follow it up and make sure we make the arrests and the searches that we need to do. There's a difference between the Westminster attack, which was single individual, and this lot. That's why we're on a heightened state of alert. You get the drift of this, Mike? It's danger, fear, danger, fear. And he said a number of hospitals have been put on alert, or why hospitals, sorry, in general have been put on alert. He said there's no specific threat against an individual event. When we go to critical, we make sure everyone is on standby. And he also confirmed there are apparently 500 active counter-terrorist investigations and about 3,000 individuals on a watch list of terrorist suspects. So according to this man, the country is in imminent danger. Just highlights that 500 active counter-terrorist investigations, 3,000 individuals. We go on here. The UK security minister says there's these no specific threats to the public, but we've got some 3,800 troops on the streets. We've got troops on trains. This is a police state, but actually there's no real evidence to support the allegation of 500 investigations. We've got no detailed reports on Manchester. What sort of man is our security minister? Well, no better place to go than his Twitter page. And I was appalled at this, Mike, because this man is using the Manchester deaths for Conservative campaigning. How did he do it? Well, if you look at the page, he's attacking Corbyn over Corbyn's war, supposedly, against anti-terror measures. This is deeply disgusting and cynical stuff by this man. And he even uses another reporter to push this out. So this man, who is supposed to be protecting everybody in the country, no matter what their political allegiance, is using the bomb attack in Manchester for Tory campaigning. And I think if we put this together, this man is just not credible. David, I looked at this morning and I thought, my goodness, if this is the quality of people that are running the country, we are in deep, deep trouble. They are liars, as Katie Hopkins rightly said, but they are utterly cold, devious people to use a terrorist attack to promote their own campaign.
Well, what they're doing and what has happened in the wake of Manchester, I think, is the country has changed. The mood in the country has changed. And things like armed police are becoming now acceptable, even welcomed. We'll come to this in a minute. Where we were reporting from Scotland about a year ago under Sir Stephen House, the opposition, the very vocal opposition from the people of Scotland to having armed police turning up at routine events. That sort of opposition probably won't exist now or won't be able to voice its concerns. So we do live in a slightly different Britain. And here we have people who are in bed with the Nudge Unit and who wish to reframe how the country approaches, how the country thinks. And that is their reason for being there. That is the modus operandi. And this is just another example of him doing this. Yes, he's trying to make short-term political capital out of it, but I think there's a longer-term change that they're trying to create as well.
Well, let's look at how minds are being changed. And Patrick, you want to focus on ABC News in the States here and their coverage of Manchester. And the headline for anybody who wants to go and look, and we're particularly interested in this video clip that's in here. We're going to show some stills from it. Brother of Manchester bombing suspect knew an attack was coming, Libyan official says. And there were a few things to note from this. The first thing to highlight is that they include a piece of video which demonstrates the making of a bomb. Aside from the fact that they do that, you can read the names of the chemicals on the packaging and so on. But we also noted that this section of video that they're highlighting has come from Site Intelligence, which of course is one of the main sources of ISIS videos and particularly White Helmets videos. But has the mainstream media become now an instruction manual for bomb making?
I think the greatest PR asset that any of these groups like ISIS, these so-called terror cutout groups, ISIS, Nusra, especially let's look at ISIS, the mainstream media in the West is their greatest springboard for public relations, marketing, and advertising. And so that's clearly you see someone making a bomb there. If you flash up that picture again, and they show a good segment of this. I mean, that video is running for like, you know, at least, I don't know, 20 or 30 seconds. And so you can kind of work out the basics. And if they want to follow up and see more, they could probably find this somewhere, on the internet or wherever. And so once again, you know, this is being beamed out to millions of people via ABC, via Sky, via CNN or whoever. So, and Site Intelligence, based in Bethesda, Maryland, seems to have some sort of monopoly on exclusives from terrorist groups for all of these things, and also the ISIS magazine and Dabiq and Spire and Rumia, and they have all these sort of publications now, which the Western mainstream media speaks of as if there's some sort of regular periodical. You know, like Life magazine or sort of, you know, Hunting Weekly. You know, it's kind of it's beyond a joke now. How they sort of almost give legitimacy and cite ISIS publications as a news source for information, which they include in their stories. So I think in this case, the Western media are providing material support. ABC there is providing material support to an internationally recognized terrorist group that is illegal by U.S. law and also by every other European country's law. So they are in violation of anti-terror laws right there because they are giving public relations support to a known terrorist group. And so why aren't the executives of that network pulled up and arrested? I mean, you can make that argument easily.
And the other point there, Patrick, was that they were showing it being made in an average kitchen. Again, trying to reinforce the idea that your next door neighbor is your enemy.
And a European kitchen. If you go back, you look at the sort of I'm not a carpenter, but you won't see a kitchen like that in the Middle East, I'm afraid. So this is somewhere in Europe, perhaps maybe in America. I'm not sure. So clearly this isn't made in Raqqa. Right. So that's another thing I was going to point out, too.
Yeah. Further on in the video, then, In fact, it may be on the follow-on video, because, of course, most of these mainstream outlets now just having video run on into video from previous reports. But they were showing this footage from one of the, well, what they were describing as arrests from in connection with the Manchester attacker. But, Patrick, what is absolutely clear from this stuff is how close, you know, we have a police operation going on, or at least we're supposed to believe that there's a police operation going on, and we have media cameras mixing in with the police. What is going on?
No, you can see when you watch this footage by ABC, you see the man running out in the street and then being gang tackled by the police in this anti-terror raid. And of course, the media are there. So what, did the police notify all the media outlets, be here at 1 o'clock, we're going to be doing a raid? So the thing is happening in real time, but there's at least a half a dozen, if not more, mainstream media organizations there present with their sort of full crews. And here you have even a presenter just basically posing in front of the scene, explaining the action behind him. It's ridiculous. So you're meant to think this is a real terror raid? What, did the police invite the full press corps before they actually, you know, take the door off of one of these flats to make this so-called terror bust? I mean, normal person would look at this and say how ridiculous this is. But for a lot of people, I don't see anybody really, you know, going after these people in this. It's kind of, I don't know, I'm scratching my head right now.
Is it fair to call this fake news?
Yeah, we can call it definitely staged news. Staged news. Fake news, I don't, you know, maybe. But certainly staged. Staged for the camera. This is a media production. So this is a controlled media production. Everything around this event in Manchester is heavily controlled and heavily produced. So that maybe, I guess, because somebody wants to have full control of the narrative. That's the only explanation I can find.
Yeah. Well, let's look at how the narrative is being controlled on social media then. And David, a number of tweets here from various people. At AS Police, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for everything you do and risking your lives to protect ours. And we have two images of a young lady posing with, or for a selfie with, two armed police officers. And in the next example, we have here at AS Police saying hi to the officers on a very warm day in WSM, and a child with two different armed police. And so it goes on. A third one here. This one came from Avon and Somerset Police themselves, saying, if you see our firearms officers out and about today, give us a wave or stop us for a chat. Don't forget to tag us in your pics. And so what that last line, David, demonstrates what they want is social media bombarded with these images of the nice, friendly armed police officers who are there to give you hugs and kisses and not shoot you in the head.
Isn't it just so striking? I mean, this is a PR campaign. 2 years ago, we were looking at multiple complaints to police over the introduction of armed police into Scotland. It was one of the three or four huge controversies that caused Chief Constable Sir Stephen House to resign. And here we see a police force now within the United Kingdom. It's almost laughable, you know, with militarized police with in the uniform emblazoned with fake color, all black Union flags, and carrying very heavy duty assault rifles, smiling with the children. It's one of those things where words virtually fail me. But what we're seeing is most certainly a change to what we are able to accept in this country. Those people walking down that street a week ago would not have been tolerated by the people round about. And today we're smiling and taking selfies.
David, this is a coup. This is a Conservative Party coup driven by a few individuals behind closed door, but it's being put across in the velvet glove. It's being sold to the public. This is a massive propaganda operation to get people to feel that armed police, which they never voted for, was never debated in Parliament, to get people to feel that they need these police and to feel safe as a result of the police. But when the next screw turns, as it will, if this nation is stupid enough to vote in Theresa May, these will be the very people used to kick in your door because you haven't paid a parking fine, or you haven't paid your mortgage, or you haven't paid your council tax. This is well down the route to a dictatorship in UK, and I'm going to say people need to wake up pretty quickly to what Theresa May is trying to do here on the back of the Manchester events.
Just briefly, Pat, before we move on, any thoughts?
I think it's interesting because, you know, everyone in Britain talking about, you know, in the wake of Brexit, how, you know, we're different than Europe. We don't want to be like Europe. And if you go to Europe, this sort of gendarmerie style heavy assault rifle police or military presence on the streets in France or in Italy or some countries, that's normal. It's part and parcel of life in continental Europe. And how they're transferring this exact same system here in Great Britain. So really, Britain's becoming more like continental Europe every day now, it seems. And I don't see anybody, you know, who are on the sort of the Brexit side of the cultural argument making this observation. Or are they? I haven't seen it yet. But I find that very interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
Obviously, former policeman. Speaks very well about what policing by consent really means. I don't find his views reflected in Police Scotland or the police management at high level in this country. No. But when someone is armed that heavily, if policing by consent had any meaning at all a week or two ago, I think it is less now.
Yeah. Just to interject 2 seconds, and of course the other thing we need to remember is that the troops that have gone into the London area are now under the control of Cressida Dick, common purpose guru, the woman who completely messed up the de Menendez operation. Somebody dies. They now put that same incompetent woman in charge of armed troops on the streets. This is common sense on its head. It's deliberate.
Okay, let's move on. David, Gilad Atzmon.
Being in Time, it's subtitled a post-political manifesto, and it looks at a great variety of the things, of the forces, of the movements that led us to the dystopian world that we now see where nothing seems to work. A fascinating book, a fascinating man. Our first meeting is in Newcastle on Monday, 7:30 at the Clooney, which is a music venue. There will also be music. There's going to be some jazz there as well. Gilad, as you know, is a wonderful saxophonist. And the second one is at Edinburgh in a radical bookshop called The Lighthouse. And then we are next on Thursday down in Plymouth with you, Mike.
In the George, yes.
In the George. So I encourage people to get along to one of those events, and there will be one or two more as well, which we'll let you know when they're arranged, which will cover the Midlands. I think Oxford and Birmingham are looking likely for venues as well, possibly one in London on the 5th of June.
Okay, super. Now, a bit of good news then about the Dockertys.
Yes, this is a photograph someone took from the last time we met up with the Dockertys, which was last weekend. We put the word out through the UK column on Thursday for people in the area to turn up and show some support. So we got an excellent turnout. We had a lot of people who have long supported the Dockertys and other cases which need public exposure, such as the Holly Grant case. Came along to welcome them back to Scotland, showed them some love, given them some support. We had a whip round, which raised £300, which will keep them eating for a little while. And then we went off for a meal, which is the image you see here. And there was a lot of laughter, a lot of smiles, a lot of care and love being shown to this family. So it was a lovely day, and it certainly did my heart good, and I know it did them good too.
For the benefit of Police Service Northern Ireland, who does own the copyright to that particular image?
That was taken by a YouTuber called Wildcat, a YouTuber and Twitter person called Wildcat. So it is her copyright. So we have permission to use it, but Police Service of Northern Ireland, you don't.
Good stuff. Okay, what's next? Policing secrets.
Now, you mentioned earlier, Brian, about how decisions are being made regarding such things as arming the transport police. And they're not being made in the public domain. They're being made behind closed doors. Well, what we're seeing here in this next story is a little bit of an explanation as to how and why. Now, the lady you see here is Moya Ali. Now, Moya Ali has got a very high reputation amongst people who want governance to be better. She's done several good things. She supported Robert Green when she was judicial complaints reviewer, and she did that job very well, and she got a very high reputation amongst people who feel that the justice system has let them down by how she conducted herself there. And she then found herself on the Scottish Police Authority. Now, this is the governing body, or the oversight body, which ensures that the unitary Police Scotland, there can be only one, remember, is doing its job and is respecting public rights and is conducting itself properly. So she was on that board, and she raised, for example, the issue of consensual searches, where police were stopping young people who were below the age of being able to enter into a contract with anybody, and in situations where the police had no right to search them, were persuading these young people to voluntarily consent to being searched. So she raised this, and she was successful in changing Police Scotland policy. So you see someone who's being effective in that oversight role. Well, can you imagine how that went for her? She was forced to resign earlier this year, and she was bullied by the head of the Scottish Police Authority. This man, Andrew Flanagan. Now, he called her a one-trick diversity pony. So here you have someone who is not ethnically Scottish and female. That's presumably what he was referring to there. But is in post because of her excellent track record and undoubted ability. And he turns around, he's chair of this organisation, and calls her, amongst other things, a one-trick diversity pony. So she felt that she had no option other than to resign. And this was because she was speaking out over the issue of openness. The issue here was that meetings were being held in secret. Meetings to respond to government calls for open governance in the Scottish Police Authority were being held in secret to discuss the open governance. Meetings were being held before scheduled meetings so that anything controversial could be discussed in private without minutes or records being kept. And other actions were along such lines as the public and other organisations would only be informed of what was in these, what was going on in the public meetings, a very short time before the meetings took place. They'd be swamped with documents so that meaningful debate and meaningful comment couldn't be made. And it would appear that any form of dissent or speaking out was prohibited, because this is why Moya Ali was forced to resign. She was speaking out on the secret meetings, on the secret governance, on the lack of openness. And she was told that speaking out and airing her views in public was a resigning matter. She was told to go.
So Flanagan then came under pressure but refused to resign. And various news outlets saying that the Scottish Parliament Committee looking at this had no confidence in Flanagan, but he still hasn't gone.
He's still there. He's still hanging on. His coat's on a very sugary peg, as we say in Scotland, but he's still there. He was actually... You know it's bad when a member of the SNP tells you you're running your organisation like it's the Kremlin. That was the word that was selected, and it was quite well selected. The committee has decided they have no confidence in him. But no, he's still in post. He is carefully considering the report at the moment. I'd be surprised if he lasts a week.
And you just wanted to highlight this video?
Yeah, this video here, if people can look this out, it's It's excellent. It's about half an hour, 40 minutes of Andrew Flanagan getting roasted over the secrecy and the lack of transparency of how he's running this committee. Specifically, he kept from the committee a very critical letter from the chief constable. He didn't circulate this, and it was essentially suppressed, and the committee really didn't miss him and hit the wall over that subject. Andrew Flanagan, if we could perhaps, just before we leave the subject, mention that he has been, when he took this post, he came from the NSPCC. He was former head of the NSPCC. And before that, he was the head of the Scottish Media Group. So it's quite an interesting CV. So he was at the head of the Scottish Media Group when they owned the Herald, which is, of course, the paper that did the hit piece on the Holly Gregg case and on Robert Green. He went to the NSPCC and decided that what they had to do was to do less but achieve more. And he wanted to change, no longer have them campaigning to end child suffering, end child cruelty. He felt that was not achievable. So he repositioned them as a service provider. So he was in there to re-engineer the business side of the NSPCC. He came up with a 7-year plan, but then after less than 3 years, he left the organization for personal reasons, not explained what those personal reasons were. But he was then picked up at the Scottish Police Authority. Now, when he went into the post in the Scottish Police Authority, Robert Green wrote to him and fully outlined the concerns over the lack of investigation in the Holly Gregg case, and also the links to Alex Salmond's office and the lies told by Alex Salmond's office concerning this, and the resistance of the Scottish government to comply with the Information Commissioner regarding the Holly Gregg case. And the response from Andrew Flanagan was that the case had been fully investigated and there was nothing more to say. So he was not interested in any sort of oversight of that particular scandal.
Okay, well, for anybody that wants to look at that video that we were discussing, the title is Alex Neil, MSP, Questions the SPA Chief, Andrew Flanagan. If you search for that, you will find that video. I think we're out of time.
We are. We'll just very quickly just put one on screen because this is very important. If I can jump through, bear with me. Last night in Penzance was a talk that was put on by the local Penzance Truth Group. Good group of people. Robbie there is the man at the front of the room on the left, giving a talk about the money supply system and banking fraud. About 35 people in the room altogether. And of course, this is wonderful because it shows that any of us as individuals can make the effort to do something. You may be confident enough to stand up and give a talk, but if not, can you write a letter? Can you ring your MP? Can you get into the hustings? Can you challenge the mainstream journalists who are clearly not telling the truth? All of these things are important, and we need to do this with some urgency because the Conservatives under Theresa May are attempting to produce a Conservative coup. If you're old Labour, you should be deeply concerned. If you're Lib Dem, you should be concerned. The priority, it appears to us at the moment, is to stop Theresa May's plan for just a Tory dictatorship. Mm. Can't say any more than that. David and Patrick, thanks very much for joining us. We will be back on Tuesday at the same time. Do enjoy the weekend, but be active, do something. Action conquers fear. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.